Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast.
You almost forgot the name of the podcast.
Where we talk about the Bible, make playlists, and introduce ourselves. I'm Matt Caleb Bastard, St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Zach Pierce. You might know me from the internet and the Facebook.com where I post insincere arguments.
Yeah, I'm not even going to let you get into what number.
I don't want to.
Not even going to go there. Because you want to talk about, inauguration things, you say. What inauguration things would you like to...
I just thought, as a podcast that talks about public speaking, we might have, and I'm leaning on your expertise here, or research, have thoughts on a public speaking event that happened this week.
Well, public speaking and there are musical artists.
There were musical artists.
That was fun.
That's true. The New Radicals, first and foremost.
And Lady Gaga with an incredible, incredible vestments, I will say. She was wearing incredible vestments. I'm a trip made for Pentecost. I could just put like a giant bird on my shirt.
Put a bird on it.
And I'm not even making fun of it. We were like, that's impressive. That's just, man, way to go. Go all out. Have a sense of the moment. No, I mean, I don't know. Like, clearly everybody that was there had some experience in public speaking, so that was good. I felt like, I'm just such a sucker for these things. But I found Biden convincing. I mean, you know, not even just, like, the content, but my Bible study later that night said, he's so old.
Just realized,
like, you could just see, and yet I also wonder, like, you know, it does seem like he is bringing like a lot of experience, and not only just like knowledge of the workings of government. I mean, maybe we'll have a little LBJ experience. We'll see. I don't know. Will that matter? I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find out. But the sense of loss too. I mean, that he's like, you know, lost his son, has this horrible story of losing his wife and daughter when he was first elected. And I just, in this time when, you know, the day before the inauguration, we had this moment of reflection on losing 400,000 people. And even that night, my worship team reflected on what a sea change that was to have the president, like, acknowledging that people have died, like, which is just... So I don't know. I wonder what difference that makes, too. So just thinking about public speaking, you know, one of the things that we sometimes reflect on is, like, you know, you can have all the skill, the public speaking skill in the world. But for a preacher, it also is about the relationships that you have. Like, that is also an important factor. It's not the only factor. As you know, as a oftentimes guest preacher, right, coming to new spaces. But those relationships too, when you're preaching in your community, matter, and the trust that you've built, your authenticity, it matters. So we'll see how that plays out. I don't know. Again, I'm a sucker for these things. Other folks can be super cynical. I don't know, but that's what I was thinking about with the public speaking.
Yeah, I'm doing right now, Matt, one of my favorite things that I get to do. Right now, we're leading up to February 7th, which is Campus Ministry Sunday. That's part of the church where traditionally we have students go out and preach in the pulpits of a bunch of local churches. And that's all good and fine. But I really like the time before that when we do Bible study together and work together and write sermons together. So I get to teach my own kind of like preaching lab every week. So right now I'm doing that. It'll be on Zoom, of course, this year. But it's a lot of fun for me. And one of the things I talked about last night, I talked about Brueggemann, talked about, you know, finding that the task of the preacher being to take the world of that we know and the world of the Bible and creating a world where both those things might be true. And that an important piece of that I told them was that preaching goes really well, or it's really effective, if you don't always just tell me about that kind of place or describe it to me, but if you can... If you believe that, if you've been there and are there to tell me about it, it's pretty convincing. So there's the relationship with the people, but in a place where there is much to mourn, someone who's done a lot of mourning is a person who can effectively tell us about that place and how we we move from that place.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe's not the most, like, the best orator in the world, like, technically or classically speaking. But these days, the bar for oration from public leaders is real, real low.
Yeah.
So, he cleared
it. Yeah, well, and gosh, like, it just, yeah, agreed. So that's the public speaking. Also, there were, you know, so we had Gaga singing.
Gaga.
I did not watch the entire. I don't know what it was called, the star-studded lineup.
Celebration America.
Celebration of America. I did go back and watch some clips though. Some clips. So I saw Springsteen's performance, which I just read a little thing on. John Caramonica in the New York Times said when Obama gave his farewell address, he walked off the stage to Land of Hope and Dreams. So Springsteen's starting with that was kind of closing that circle too. But he gave it such a different, God, what a different feel than the studio version of that. Just really much, much more, not even somber, but like very sobering, very just felt like it was a remake of that song to meet the moment. So amazing what you can do with the same song, the same lyrics repurposed for another moment. So true of our own songs and hymns and worship as well. Any of the other performances? I don't know. What did you have thoughts?
No, I had to work. I have very limited windows in which I get to do work. And so I did work while I could. But, you know, I've been seeing clips and stuff. I mostly, like I sent to you in our text, wanted Tom Hanks to jump into the reflection pond and yell Jenny a la Forrest Gump, but he, alas, did not. To my knowledge, maybe I missed that clip.
Tom Hanks, national treasure, Tom Hanks, was on, he was on Colbert last week or 2 weeks ago or something, and he did this, Colbert's in this questionnaire. And one of the questions on the questionnaire is, what song would you listen to on repeat if you could only listen to one song for the rest of your life? What would it be? And he said, "The Go-Go's, Our Lips Are Sealed," which I couldn't remember what that song was, but you should look it up on Spotify because every time I hear it, it cracks me up. And Colbert was like dying laughing, and he was like, "I mean, it's a good song, but like, really? That was great."
We were blessed. Phenomenal. Maybe I should spend a little more time, Matt. I posted it on, I think on the Twitter or the Instagram for the Vada Preacher about how for the inauguration, the New Radicals, who I didn't know had broken up in 1999, got back together for one show. I mean, this is the kind of thing that like REM should do, you know, like it's just a simple backyard barbecue. Bring them together, the guys together, to play the inauguration. But no, instead of an REM reunion for one show, we get the New Radicals. You Only Get What You Give, which is a lovely, catchy song that evidently Ice-T is super into, unironically. So that happened.
Incredible.
I had one friend on the social medias who was legitimately and enthusiastically excited to see that the New Radicals had gotten back together.
Incredible.
They brought back the bucket hat. I mean, that was huge for bucket hat people.
Yeah.
Those of us in the bucket hat universe, we've been in hibernation and hiding for 2 decades. And now, thanks to Mr. New Radical rocking the bucket hat, we're back.
I had a bucket hat. Who didn't have a bucket
hat?
Who
didn't?
Oh my goodness.
All those people out there acting like they're better than bucket hats.
Well, I know that you want to go into the TV corner.
I'm excited about TV.
Talk more about TV. You know, speaking of things that are back, Trevor Noah has been on break for like at least 2-3 weeks.
Oh, weeks.
I mean, where has he been? My gosh. He's back. He's back this week. And I'm so grateful that he's... He's just like light years ahead of the other hosts at the moment.
Oh, you think so?
I enjoy Colbert, but I just feel like he's just
I watch on YouTube. I watch the Seth Meyers, not the full show, but that like 15 minutes Seth that Meyers. He does. That's like a tight, like typically President Trump related. I don't know what they'll be about in the future, but and you know, friend of a friend of the podcast, Amber Ruffin writes for Seth Meyers. So
what?
Angela Kebab, her sister, is Angela is Amber Ruffin.
Really? Did not know that.
Got a new book coming out.
Cool.
Angela Kebab is also a contributing. She's more than a contributing writer. She has a regular column now in Living Lutheran. So good for her.
Nice. Well, what other television should we talk about?
Well, Matt, I needed to talk to you, and we might as well record it and release it as a podcast because I watched. I feel like I've been in a dry spot, you know. The shows I've been really into were gone. We kind of hit that like Christmas lull. People aren't like dropping shows during Christmas, and I was really looking for stuff. And so when WandaVision came out, you know, on the Disney Plus, I've enjoyed a lot of these Disney Plus offerings. I thought, you know, I'm not a huge Avenger head, right? But I've watched all of them, you know. This will be good and entertaining because that's what I normally think of when I see an MCU-related piece of content.
Yeah.
So I watched the first episode and went fully into it. I didn't know who Wanda was. I didn't know who Vision was.
What?
No, had no idea.
Have you not seen Avengers Endgame, biggest movie of all time? No, haven't.
Is that one of the Avengers movies?
Oh my god. You could on Disney Plus. They have also put out something called Marvel. I believe it's Legends. Legends. I checked it out. It's just clips from the movies. So like, you can click on Vision, and it's just all the Vision clips from the movies. So that can get up to speed real quick.
I could do it. Well, I watched it, right? And you're like, wow, this is funny, and clearly there's something like going on here, but I'm making some assumptions here. I bet he's not a human. She seems to have some magical powers. And then I watched it, and I was like, wow, that was a great, a well-executed television show. I don't know why I would watch another one. I did go back and watch the second one, Matt.
Did you just do one? Oh, you did the second.
I did, but it took me like a week before I was like,
yeah.
Okay, I think I saw something on the internet that like was talking about how great it was and stuff and gave me a little more context, and I was like, I'll give it a shot. I've just never been interested in any of the you know, I watched Game of Thrones initially with like my laptop and like a geneograms of the whole like all the people and stuff, and wanted to binge mode it. I've never had that kind of interest in Avengers, so I don't have any.
Sure. Yeah, you need. I mean, you could check out Binge Mode too. Right now, they're going all through the MCU, and every time Jason Concepcion will do like, he'll do like at least 15 minutes on some deep dive into the comics because he's like super into the comics, and I always learn. I'm just like, what? So I wonder if they'll do the TV series. They've only done movies so far, but it is. You know, you can do a deep dive. So here's. I don't know super a lot about where they're going either. I will say I did buy a Vision graphic novel. It was Tom King's take on Vision from a couple years ago. It's intense. He like creates a suburban family, so it's clearly like somewhat related to this series, but a little bit different. One thing that they're doing, if you looked at the posters for the series, and it looks like every episode is going to be like a different decade of television. So that could get more interesting as the decades go on, right? They clearly started in the 50s.
I never saw the Dick Van Dyke show, 60s. But I did watch a lot of Bewitched. So the second episode.
Yeah, there you go.
I was into that.
I mean, they even changed that intro, right? So like, I'm excited for the 90s, clearly. Excited to see where that goes. And yeah, it should definitely get weirder. I don't know where it's going either. Chris had about the same response. He was like, I don't know why I would keep watching this. So we'll see if people stick around through it. Also, Vision's supposed to be dead.
He is supposed to be dead.
So it's not clear. I don't know if they brought him back. I don't know if this is all in her head. Clearly, some of it's got to be in her head. So I don't know. We'll see. Other note. some folks did mention that perhaps the voice that keeps saying, "Who's doing this to you, Wanda?" Sounds a lot like the voice of Randall Park, who played an FBI agent,
a SHIELD agent,
Ant-Man, and had the great line about how, "I'm also a youth pastor." So,
love Randall Park. He's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've read the. I have done some digging. I've read the idea that Catherine Hahn, who I initially confused as Anna Gasteyer, may be an Agatha witch, right?
Yeah.
Also, is Wanda called Wanda? But also, like, the Scarlet Witch? Is that what she was?
Yeah, that's her.
So she's a witch? That's not bewitched? I mean, it could be clearer. Guys, could be clearer. But.
That's all I got for you.
So I'm caught up. While I'm waiting on that, Matt, I'm kind of out of TV shows. So I started watching a slightly older show that's come out. There's a new season out, but I have not caught up yet because I just started watching the series Call the Midwife on Netflix, which has big BBC vibes, feels. It's about a midwife from a relatively well-off background who goes to East London in the 50s to be a midwife in, like, the slums of East London. And it's super good and really well written. And I think it came out before I had a child. And now, having had a child, I think I'm in a much better place to be able to watch it. But there's just one thing, Matt. Have you seen that at all? Have you watched Call the Midwife?
No. I've not.
I think you and Chris, you might enjoy this. But I'd like to tell you about a scene in the first episode that is the scariest and funniest thing I've ever seen or heard in my entire life. So she shows up in East. She's been trained as a nurse and as a midwife. She shows up to the place where she's going to be working. She lives in a nunnery with these nuns who are out here doing the same work, and they give her, like, a pregnancy kit. It's like, your first day, here you go, here's the equipment you get, and kind of like checking it out, a la Bruce Wayne with the butler dude, you know? And so they're handing her these things, and a thing that evidently, you know, especially in the 50s, was a part of childbirth was were enemas, Matt. Enemas. And they're like, here's your rectal tube, glass. And she holds it, and she has this horrified look on her face because it's a rectal tube for enemas made out of glass. Right? You don't want a glass tube in your rectum, Matt? And she makes this horrible face that even in the 50s, this was not a good idea. And the nun who's there is like, don't worry. You've got a backup rectal tube, also glass. And the only thing in the world, Matt, that I can imagine is scarier than a glass rectal tube is a backup glass rectal tube, right? I got good news and I got bad news here. Bad news, you got a broken glass rectal tube in you. Good news, I've got a backup glass rectal tube. Matt, that's what you're missing. You're missing some good quality content here with Called Midwife.
Wow, you have not convinced me, but... So noted.
What have you done, Matt, besides not watch Called Midwife?
We got caught up on Cobra Kai. Very excited about that. Another season coming. So good. My only note on Cobra Kai is I think they should continue to focus on the next generation instead of the old terrible dudes. Villain from the 80s. But still, just incredible. Incredible show. Can't believe how good it is. And we decided we were like, we also needed something to watch. Because, you know, WandaVision, two episodes, then it's going to be one a week. Like, give me a bit. How are you going to binge with that?
You can't do it.
You can't do that. So, so opened our Netflix and trending this new show called Lupin. I clicked on the trailer and it was in French. Mm-hmm. But my wife loves heist movies.
Oh, really?
Loves heist movies, just loves them. And so this checked a whole bunch of boxes for her. So we said, let's check it out. Also, he's known as this character, Lupin, is a gentleman thief, mm-hmm. which I thought was hilarious. And then I Googled it, and it's like there's a whole Wikipedia entry on gentlemen The Gentleman Thief. And one of the first movies that Chris and I watched when we were dating, first movies we watched together, was The Saint with Val Kilmer. If you recall that one, which you probably don't, but he was also a gentleman thief. That movie also starred Elizabeth Shue, who was in The Karate Kid, 7 Degrees of Separation. But this is good. You've been watching it too, I think.
Yeah, Matt, I'm a little concerned because as you were talking about it, I don't know if you can see it here. I got a notification, it says now, from Netflix that says, you finished Lupin. If you're ready, try these suggestions next. I don't know who has been listening to the podcast here in real time, but we appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen live. I have. Again, my wife's super into it, and it was great. It was good. It was really good. It is in French. I'm not typically a person who's like, wow, it's in French. This is great. I don't have any French skills at all, but good, you know. I did. I mean, I feel like this is a question for your wife. Is Lupin? Are those books real? Like they're based. So in the show, there's a gentleman thief who's yeah. kind of based on a character out of novels. I assumed the novels that it was like a kind of a. I got Sherlock Holmes kind of vibes, you know, to like.
Yeah.
But on the other side of the law.
So our Arsène Lupin it is a series of books in the early 1900s by the French writer Maurice Leblanc. But then also became a graphic novel called Lupin the Third, mm-hmm. who is like a descendant of Lupin. And Lupin the Third is a line from a Lupe Fiasco song, and I cannot remember what Lupe Fiasco song it is, but he's like Lupin the Third, and I had no idea what the heck he was talking about until this show came out, and I was like, wait, these things are connected, and it totally is. Lupin the Third is also like a much more recent, but was extremely popular in certain circles. I think it's just like an anime show as well. Huh. I don't know all the details, but Lupin the Third, it's like a thing among a certain subset
what
of
happened
nerd
to
culture.
Lupe? You know, he had a moment there.
I don't know.
Didn't he?
I don't know, man. Mm. I don't know. I want to know what song it is, but it's from Kanye West's Touch the Sky, where Lupe Fiasco has a verse.
Interesting.
Yes, yes, guess on who's on third. Lupe steal like Lupin the Third, right? Because he steals stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, so there you go. Little connection for you. I do think, I think it's a good show. It's really watchable, partly because Omar Sy is like a really good actor, and you're sitting there going, how does this man not have more roles? Like, this dude can carry the show. Like, he's just really good. I do think there are, like, just notes for the writers. I feel like they could make a couple of tweaks where, like, you know, there's a couple, like, revelations where you're like, really? Like he reads this note from his dad, and, like, some things are misspelled, and I'm like, you just noticed this today? Like, you've had this letter for 30 years? Like, it doesn't make sense, right? It feels like there needs to be just a little, like just something else. Or this moment where, like, he's talking to the wealthy wife of this villain, and he's like, wait, you paid for my education? And we're like, come on, man. Like, who else do you know?
That was good.
Like an unnamed wealthy person has paid for your education. Like, come on, you, this was the first time that you thought of that. This person's really, and it'd be one thing if
you're
like,
incredibly smart.
This person was,
I am wealthy.
Right, he's incredibly smart. And then at that moment, he thinks
perceptive.
Like, it just doesn't. Right, so at some, and it just it feels like you could fix that with just a little bit of writing tweaking, but still eminently watchable, enjoyable.
My favorite part, Matt. I think you probably already got there when he, spoilers, when he confronts Dumont, the guy who appears to have been involved in it, and he set up a million video cameras in Dumont's house, right? And he ends up like kidnapping him and interrogating him, which seemed like serious crimes, but he seems like a good guy, so it's fine. And then he goes home, Dumont goes home, and he looks for and destroys all the cameras. And I had two things, right? One, it showed him destroying all the cameras, and they were not particularly discreet. Like, they were...
Right, yeah.
They were all pretty easy to find. And after he destroys them all, Matt, he goes and takes a shower. how do you know that you've destroyed all of the secret cameras?
Right. Yeah, you're immediately like, going to get naked.
You didn't know that there were cameras. Now you're like, there are cameras, and you found a bunch of them. Surely that's all of them. Time to take my pants down. Like, what?
Yep. Oh. That's,
and then he's making like phone call, like sensitive phone calls in the house that he knows was just like all camered up and stuff. And but like, are you surprised by this? Like what?
Right.
Yeah, you get a burner phone. You watch The Ringer, and you get a burner phone.
Yeah. It's I'm interested to see where it goes, because it does feel like part of it, like, he's so obsessed with, like, solving this thing from the past, which does feel important, and you're, like, rooting for him to do it. And yet, like, it also is messing up his present life, like, his ability to be a present dad and, like, right, and have these, like, present-day relationships. And so I wonder if that's going to be a continuing theme as we continue into future
yeah,
seasons.
I feel
it's
like...
It's an interesting question, right? Like, how much do you focus on, like, trying to right this wrong from the past, and how much do you, like... when it, like, destroys your present. I don't know. It's interesting.
Are you suggesting that vengeance might not be the most healthy way to live your life? It's like a guiding principle?
Right. We'll see if they keep exploring that.
Yeah, you've got one more episode to go, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's. I'd like to hear from his son about how... how he thinks this is going for their relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now that we've exclusively talked about the Bible,
that's another episode of TV Corner.
Well, let's talk about the Bible and make a playlist.
We're getting into it here, Matt. It's almost we're scooting up on.
Hey, one more note on the inauguration and the Bible. I'm gonna tie it together here.
Ooh.
There was this young poet from Los Angeles, Amanda Gorman, and. She referenced a bunch of lyrics. I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this correctly, but I believe she mentioned the everyone shall dwell under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid, which everybody now references to Hamilton, even though it originally comes from the Old Testament, right? But there you go, scripture being passed down through popular culture and ending up.
Hamilton's the new Shakespeare. Is that what you're saying?
I'm just, you know.
That's Shakespeare. Well, Shakespeare was quoting the Bible.
Interesting scriptural connection.
There you go. There's a lot of Bible. There's a lot of Bible.
Right? Well, and a lot of Bible that he swore on. I don't know if you saw the size of that thing.
I did. I thought it was a menu from the Cheesecake Factory.
It's apparently his family Bible.
All right.
From like the 1800s. It's insane. My family did not.
It definitely had the Apocrypha in it. Because how else could you get that height?
Oh my gosh.
Ugh.
So let's dive into the Old Testament. Deuteronomy 18.
Nice little short one here, man.
Yeah, what have we got here? 18, 15, 20. Moses said, "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your own people, and you
what
shall
a humble,
heed."
Humble servant, humble, Moses.
Very humble.
He finally you got around heed. To speaking, and then this is what he says.
Yep, you shall heed such a prophet. This is what you requested of the Lord your God at Horeb on the day of the assembly, when you said, "If I hear the voice of the Lord my God anymore, if ever again I see this great fire, I will die."
You know, Matt, I just said that to my daughter. Except I said, if I hear your voice anymore or ever again see this great fire, I will die.
Then the Why, Lord Papa? Replied to me, "They are right in what they have said.
They will die.
I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their own people. I will put my words in the mouth of the prophet, who shall speak to them everything that I command. Anyone who does not heed the words that the prophet shall speak in my name, I myself will hold accountable. But any prophet who speaks in the name of other gods, or who presumes to speak in my name a word that I have not commanded the prophet to speak, that prophet shall die." Word of God, word of life.
Oh, thanks be to God.
Transfer of power. I mean, you gotta change leaders at some point. And this
it's a
is,
peaceful transfer of power
it.
With a threat of violence.
Of violence, yes. Yeah.
Moses is probably about to die here, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. this is, yeah.
I mean, so I don't have anything, like, too crazy. I mean, this is referencing, right? It does it, just but to make it explicit, back to when, oh, gosh, on Horeb, is this Ten Commandments? Is that what happened here? When they got the Ten Commandments and all that stuff's going on, and the people are like, God's too much, and Moses gets to see God's butt. But the part that I would mm-hmm. emphasize, because I've mostly focused here on the gospel, is the promise that the prophet will come from among your own people. The prophet will come from the bottom up. And I think that's the piece of this reading. There's not a lot of story here, but that's the piece of the reading that I would emphasize.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Raise up for them a prophet like you from among their own people. I think too, this the threat of death that we joke about, it is here. It is a challenging thing in the scriptures, but there's also like an invitation to humility, I think, among our leaders, right? To say, all right, you got to check yourself, right? Is this my word? Is this God's word? There's an accountability piece that mm-hmm. is in here for any leader that claims the mantle, and someone's got to claim the mantle. Someone has to be lifted up in every generation to do the work, whatever that looks like in that context, in that time. But there's a call to humility in the midst of this as well. There's a call to leadership. God's going to put his words in the mouth of the prophet. That's pretty heavy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But also this thing to say, but be careful.
Yeah.
Which is like a call to humility is
that's a good,
valuable thing.
Good way to frame it.
I mean, I've always seen like the one nation under God. There's always these debates about whether we should take that out and blah, blah, blah. And they're really dumb. But my take for a long time has been that like the value in something like that isn't so much pledging allegiance to a particular religion, but saying that you have to be under something, you know, that none of us are above it all. But there's a humility implied in being under something that is beyond you.
I like it. I like it, Matt. I think there's a dynamic here, too, that you kind of hit on when we were talking about with preaching, the relationship with the people. But that I think there's something descriptive of how effective leadership works. And that when the message is coming from one of your own people, I think you got a higher batting average than when it comes from an outsider. My imagination, when I first hear this, I feel like the alternative to this would be God just like shouting out from the heavens what's supposed to happen. And we would all clearly recognize this is what we're supposed to do. And that's kind of true. But also the alternative is of something, something that is not you kind of telling you what to do, like an outsider voice mm-hmm. telling you what to do. And the reality is that when you hear it from you, when you hear the hard truth that a prophet might have to proclaim, you are more likely to hear and receive them when it comes from the voice of one of your own.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Amen.
I wrote a little bit about that in my MLK Day email that I sent to students. I think we did it last year where we poked some fun at MLK Day memes about like the clippy sort of like lacking context. So I decided I would just write about context instead of like trying to like quipify it. One of the things that I've read about in recent years is kind of like the context of what was going on in Birmingham and Montgomery in the 30s and 50s. And one of the kind of interesting things, if you read the letter from White Clergy, A Call for Unity, which is interesting after...
Yeah, you can find it. It's out there.
Oh, yeah. You can find it. If you Google A Call for Unity, letter from white clergymen, clergymen of Birmingham, the first one that come up is a PDF that has their letter and then King's letter, the response, the letter from Birmingham jail afterwards. Interesting.
Kind of an incredible title after an inaugural address that could have been titled "A Call for Unity" from an old white, man. Again, with sympathy, I generally liked it, but... Yeah, mm-hmm. relevant.
Yeah, and their one of their critiques of King is you're an outside agitator, right? Like, let us deal with our problems. We don't need you coming in to fix things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And And of course, 50, 60 years, 70 years now removed, we read that and we're like, these racist assholes, you know. But the truth is, too, King wasn't from Alabama. Dr. King didn't grow up in Birmingham or Montgomery. He grew up in Atlanta, which is the hoitiest of toities of where you could be from in the South. He's coming to this little church in, in Montgomery or Birmingham. I get mixed up. He's come to this little church from 6 years in the North. He's got a PhD. All right. Like, from Boston University. Like, he's a complete outsider to the black community there as well. And you can read some of, like, Fred Shuttlesworth in particular, who's kind of the leader of the civil rights movement at the time, being, folks were really skeptical of him coming in and, like, organizing them, you know? Mm-hmm. And that what made him successful and made the movement successful was his ability to, like, become one of them. You know, and I think I like to think of, he was in Birmingham. He was living in Birmingham because his home was firebombed in Birmingham, right? Which would have been the time to leave. But to stay with folks, to hit the notes from Biden before, through the things that need to be mourned, through doing that cruciform shape, that cruciform journey, cross-shaped journey, was a way that he was able to become one of them and to be a prophet among those people.
Hey, man, nice tie-in. I like that.
Boom. And then I got to throw up my picture from the Highlander School. Woody Guthrie, Rosa Parks, Ralph Abernathy, and Dr. King.
So the gospel is somewhat related to this theme as well.
We are spending, you know, Mark's not very long, only about 13 chapters.
We're still in chapter one, by
the
way.
We're in chapter one, and we're going to be in chapter one next week, right?
Incredible.
Which is incredible, but also, like, a ton happens. Like, we've got 7 verses here.
Yeah.
We're kind of in the back half now of the first chapter, but it's got, like, multiple episodes happen every week in these readings, and it's wild. So Jesus, what just happened, remember, Jesus has called James and John the sons of thunder. He's called a couple of disciples. They've left their nets behind, left Zebedee, old Papa Bear Thunder behind, and they're following Jesus. So they go to Capernaum, which is a small village on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. If you do the Holy Land thing, you'll definitely go there. It's a little more of a city, certainly more of a city than Nazareth was. It's just up the shore from. It's in between two, like, big tourist spots, because they've got these two churches right together, which is, like, the Church of the Primacy of, like, Paul and Peter, which is where Jesus, it is the legendary site where Jesus walks on water. It's next to the Church of the Multiplication of Loaves and Fishes. You've all probably seen, like, the communion ware that have, like, a mosaic print of the fish and the loaves and stuff. That mosaic is at that church right there. And it's in between where those two churches are and then underneath the hill where that is considered to be the mount from which the Sermon on the Mount was preached. Anyway, so he's keeping it along the seashore here. And then when the Sabbath came, he entered the synagogue there in Capernaum, and they were astounded at his teaching. And he taught them as one having authority, not as the scribes. And just then there was in the synagogue, while he's teaching, a man with an unclean spirit. And he cries out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying with a loud voice, came out of him. And they all were amazed and kept on asking one another, "What is this? A new teaching with authority. He commands even the unclean spirits, and they obey him." And at once his fame began to spread throughout the surrounding region of Galilee.
Whew.
Mm-hmm. So, Matt, names here are really important. Lots of professional preachers have, like, a whole back catalog of sermons about names. What is a name? What does your name mean? But these things are important. It is important to note that this unclean spirit, first of all, that he knows who Jesus is. He knows who Jesus is in two ways, right? He calls him Jesus of Nazareth, and then he makes the first confession of who Jesus is that any character in the Gospel of Mark makes. An unclean spirit is the first one to say, you are the Holy One of God. No quote-unquote good guys will say this until chapter 8, when Peter makes his confession. But really important, he doesn't say, what have you to do with us? Come, space, Jesus, Son of God, Jesus, whatever, Jesus of Nazareth. Because in the ancient Near East, in first century Palestine, remember, your power, your authority, your role in society was determined mostly by the circumstances of your birth. And so, according to my friends, Rorba Molina, someone of Jesus who's of low birth, he's from Nazareth, which is hardly a city or a village, born to unimportant people, he would not even have the power or authority to speak in the synagogue, much less to like teach with authority. And so already, just by Jesus showing up, people didn't just walk into the synagogue and start teaching, right? Like, we hear it so much in the Bible, it sounds like that's what people did. You just, lots of people all the time were all just rolling up in the same guy and teaching. It's not, he's doing apparent social behavior, right? He is not following the social rules at all. So he shows up and he's saying this stuff. And the unclean spirit really kind of puts words to what had to be in the minds of everyone there. Why are you teaching here? Because you're not supposed to be there. You don't deserve to be there. This does not make any sense at all. But then Jesus rebukes him and he says, be silent. And this silence, only the word for silence, I believe, only happens three times. Nope, more than three times. It is interesting. In a few chapters, Jesus will calm the seas by telling them to be quiet. And so again, just this emphasis of like how powerful Jesus is, which is not so much to say like Jesus is Wanda or Vision, right? That he has these superpowers, but mm-hmm. that the thing to take away from this that would have stuck out in everybody's mind is that in order to be that powerful, their origin stories, they didn't have origin stories like, I had a bunch of pet turtles and there was this radioactive ooze that came down the sewer and they got powerful. They didn't have origin stories of people getting bit by spiders. The origin story was you were born to a king or someone else really powerful and that's mm-hmm. how you have power. And so mm-hmm. when Jesus is doing these powerful things, what it messes up is the structure of society, because as he demonstrates how powerful he is, it means that he's way above where he should be in terms of like his place in the universe here. And that may sound foreign to us, right? The idea that the circumstances of your birth might determine how everybody would consider you and like consider mm-hmm. your place in the world. But I am struck by a friend of the podcast, Joseph Carrera's posts that he had on the Facebook, which is important. Is that it's kind of like they're going up to him and telling Jesus, wow, you're so articulate and so well-spoken, you know, which is, you know, another way that people like deal with this displacement of the notions, the hierarchy of the world that they've been given or are living into.
Yeah. 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 Agreed. Like, it's so interesting, this word that comes up twice in here, authority. As he taught them as one having authority. What is this? A new teaching with authority. What's that Greek word? I feel like you should usually have the Greek word for us.
I looked into it. I didn't find anything too
not
interesting.
Too much?
It's
not
the
too
classic
much.
Word, exousia, I believe is what it is.
Interesting. Interesting.
Used a ton of times in the Gospels.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's clearly like some power there, and power dynamics. It's just so... It's really interesting. I think it gets to this. Well, I'm going to take it back around. So I'll respond to Joseph on the podcast, because that's nice. How we respond to people.
We do not communicate directly, only through podcasts.
It was a really good post. And I don't think it precludes having pride in what people are doing. I know at our Bible study that night, last night, folks were really excited. I mean, it's just like, God, that was great. And so there was genuine pride in this person who comes from our, 'cause she's from Los Angeles. Yep. Like, she comes, it's amazing. And yet, at the same time, right after that kind of just celebration and just joyful expressions of pride, there was also, how many other Amanda Gormans are out there that we don't get to hear from, you know? And that question also went around the room. And I think both things can be true, right? Yeah. And again, not get to hear from, not just because, you know, do amazing things, but just the power and authority that is in every child of God. And I think it gets to the question here, and this is a legit, like, theological question that we could have. Is this a unique authority that Jesus has? Yes. And also, because I know you love the both and, it tells us something about ourselves, right, in our baptism, that we are no longer subject to these, the authorities of the world, this hierarchy of the world, but we have in our baptism, and by the power of the Holy Spirit, are given, you know, it just by virtue of being God-breathed creatures, have power and authority. And that is one of the things that I think Jesus is also trying to teach us, right? That it isn't just about, it is partly about Jesus having this unique authority, but part of his unique authority is that he is, part of what he is doing with that authority is telling us about ourselves too.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it can just be helpful to mention, you know, to not mention, but to help people see that there is like a hierarchy and like a power structure system in place, even among the well-intentioned. You know, like I think about all the times, it happens less and less these days, Matt. But in the early days when I would go to churches, I would get a lot of, you're so young. You did such a great job and you're so young to be a pastor, you know, because... And I can hear those words very charitably or very uncharitably. But a part of that, like, mix matching of things is that it's people had a power, like a structure that the world operated in, and they're being confronted with these ways that it's been mixed up. And the first thing you got to do is recognize that you have a hierarchy. Like, you likely do not have a fully egalitarian worldview, dear listener.
Speaking of cast out demons, you're saying it's a cast system? What?
Hey!
Cast system?
Yeah. Yeah. Cast
system. Shout out to Isabel Wilkerson's cast.
I'm still on the wait list, on the holds on that. But so here's my good news, Matt. The good news is twofold, right? In one way, I think that you lifted up really well that any that the identity that truly matters, right, is your identity as a child, as a person of God. That no matter where you are from, whatever it is that has defined you in the eyes of the world, that the powers that might be, you are the one who has the power to cast out demons, to be the people of God. But then the other side of it, right, is not simply the good news that you get to be the power of God, but the good news that the power of God might, not only that it might come from the unexpected places, but that if you're looking for it in the world, it's going to come from the unexpected places. So stop, like in Deuteronomy, gawking up at the skies, waiting for God to come down. But look to the places. Go and find all the Amanda Gormans in Los Angeles, because they're there, right? And that's, again, a little more complicated. I want to hit one last Greek note here, Matt, and that's a maze. I thought it was used like a bajillion times, and maybe there's another word, but the word that gets used here, they were all amazed, which is a weird biblical concept that doesn't work well for us, because awe and amazement typically in the Bible has this level of fear. But I thought I'd lift up that the only other two times in all the Gospels that this word is used is in Mark. And it's in Mark chapter 10, where the disciples are amazed when Jesus tells them that he's going to die and be raised, right? Like, it's not hooray, no more demons, this is great. And they're perplexed. It actually gets translated as perplexed in 24, in Mark 10, 24. So they're like, hooray, there are no more demons. Hooray, God can come from anywhere. But also there's a bit of fear that what does it mean now that the way that I my place in the universe is now jeopardized because I don't know who's what, any which way is up or down anymore. So there's this level of fear of this unknown thing to come.
Yeah, I wonder what the... I don't know. I wonder what a better word is. I mean, it almost makes me wonder, like, they're shaken up, speaking mm-hmm. from a place where we have earthquakes. And that can be a mixed bag. I don't know. We should, like, there should be some other word. Maybe there's not a good word for it in English, but... Mm-hmm. You're right. Amaze doesn't quite capture it. Yeah.
Amaze sounds a little too like, hey, we just witnessed a biblical miracle. Isn't this amazing?
You're right.
Lucky us.
Right.
It's a little more like, wow, this really great thing happened, and everything I knew about the world is now in question.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the cost of this miracle.
Right. Well, what... What are we listening to?
Matt, I've continued. Well, there's a little new music. I'll start with the new music that came out this week. Because I feel like the content has slowed down. The faucet that for a while there, everybody was just like, whether it was movie, TV, albums, if you got them, like, smoke them if you got them. Like, let's just put it out there, you know? But the new music on my new music radar on the Spotify had slowed down a little bit. But this week, last week, Lake Street Dive announced that they're coming out with a new album called Obviously, which makes the press releases difficult to read. And they dropped a new single from it called Nobody's Stopping You Now, which seems like a great fit for one of the ways you can read the gospel. Of course, it's got, you know, Rachel, the lead singer of Lake Street Dive, who has such a great voice for anthems in particular, has a big anthemic chorus. So check it out. As I was thinking about houses and homes here, Matt, they're not houses at home. Teach your children well is what I was thinking about, because Jesus teaches a lot here. And I was kind of looking for a teaching angle, and I couldn't come up with anything. So it made me think of... off of Deja Vu. I've been listening to that album a lot from Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, Teach Your Children Well. It doesn't work perfect for this, so I'm going to go with a song that I didn't like at first, but has really grown on me, called Almost Cut My Hair, which has, you know, the line, I decided to let my freak flag fly. Jesus is breaking social norms, just like Almost Cut My Hair. And then finally, off of the that weird little playlist album that they put together for music inspired by Game of Thrones, Power is Power by SZA, The Weeknd, and Travis Scott all together.
Amazing. Good stuff. Well, trying to think about songs about power. I've got a whole power playlist, but I think one of my favorites from that is... Hozier with Mavis Staples, Nina Cried Power. It's a very unusual little song, but really good. And Mavis Staples is the right choice for it. There's a good episode of, what is that show where they break down the making of a song? I can't remember, but there's a really great episode of it.
Song Exploder
with Hozier and Mavis Staples talking about this song. It's good.
Really?
Good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see, thinking about this Demoniac being released. Bob Dylan's I Shall Be Released. You know, Bob Dylan played Bill Clinton's inaugural. Isn't that incredible? Bill Clinton. Just something else.
He probably seemed old back then.
They were, some of the New York Times reporters in their live feed were commenting on, you know, past inaugurations, and somebody was like, yeah, Obama was probably the most memorable. But Clinton's might have been the most fun because it was just an incredible music lineup. Like Michael Jackson, Bob Dylan, like what is even happening? Which just says a lot about that early 90s moment. And then finally, did something new on my record player.
Ooh.
Played a 45 record, a single.
How was it?
I've got a single from Record Store Day a couple of years ago now, I'm like 7 years ago, when you two put out the single for Ordinary Love, which is from this Mandela movie, and I had to go pick it up at my local record store. But in order to play this record, I had to move the belt, because the belt is set up for 33, and in order to play a 45, you just have to move the belt to the next little notch. It's very manual. It just really feels like, you know, you gotta do something. You know, if I'd ordered just that Audio Technica one, you could probably just push a button and they'll fix
probably,
it.
Yeah.
Nope, this one, I got to physically move that belt. And so I did. And it sounds great, but then I flipped it over and the B-side to Ordinary Love is Breathe is a song from their No Line on the Horizon album. You don't care about any of this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. From No Line on the Horizon 2009. And then they changed all the words for a Mandela version for a B-side for this single. And also changed it into like a much more acoustic song with a strong guitar. And it sounds incredible on vinyl. Like, I've heard this song before, and I was like, oh, this is good. I like this song. On vinyl, I was like, whoa, what is this coming out of the speakers? It's really, really good. So YouTube Breathe, the Mandela version. I'll put that on there as well.
Awesome. Well, check it out. Remember, dear listener, you could find a link to the Spotify playlist for this Sunday's songs and every Sunday songs down in the episode description. Matt, this has been a lot of fun. I enjoyed recording the podcast with you. And I just have would like to say to our dear listeners tonight, I have a goodbye for them. A special message. I want you to know. I'm just going to speak. Matt, if you could just take your headphones off. Don't listen to this part. This is just between me and the listener. I want you to know, dear listener, that Matt and I, we love you. We will be back in some form. Have a good life. We will see you soon.